There is nothing more feared aboard a ship, especially aboard a wooden ship, than fire. And there is no emergency, no threat, which demands a quicker, more disciplined response. But there was no possibility of anything resembling a disciplined response aboard GNS St. Ithman that night, at that moment. Too many men who would have responded instantly, under other conditions, were already dead, wounded, or maddened by panic. And the smell of wood smoke, the sudden crackle of flames, were the death knell of any hope of restoring order. The fire spread with horrifying speed, overtaking men as they ran, crawling over the wounded who shrieked and tried to drag their broken bodies out of its embrace, licking up heavily tarred rigging, despite the saturating rain which had come down for so many hours, racing through shattered internal bulkheads, roaring jubilantly as it discovered the paint store and gorged itself on turpentine and gallons of cottonseed oil. By the time Armok had reloaded and Darko Sound had crossed St. Ithman's stern and poured her own thundering avalanche of iron into the reeling ship, the savagely wounded galleon was clearly doomed. Men, some of them on fire, flung themselves over the side, seeking the temporary cooling salvation of the sea. Flames roared like one of Edward Hausman's blast furnaces, and sparks were already cascading up out of the open hatchways. And then Armok's guns came to bear on their second target. The destruction of Cornelis Harper's windward column was total. Taken by surprise, unable to believe what was happening, rousing from the depths of sleep to face nightmare, and with the sudden, roaring inferno of St. Ithman blazing against the night, the ships of that column never recovered. It wasn't for want of trying. The three rear ships never had a chance. Assailed out of the darkness, their crews were ripped to pieces before they could even begin to respond. The Carizian ships closed to as little as 20 yards, paralleling their targets, overhauling them steadily and yet slowly enough to pound each of them mercilessly in turn. Masts went over the side. Guns were dismounted before their breaching ropes could even be cast off. It was a howling nightmare that shattered the fabric of the ships themselves almost as quickly and as brutally as it shattered the cohesiveness of the crews which manned them. The 11 ships ahead of them had more time, at least some warning. Sailing ships, even Carizian sailing ships, are seldom as swift as slash lizards. It took time for Armok to overtake the ships ahead of St. Ithman, and Lock Island's greatest fear had been that one of the Church Column's leading units would turn out of line on her own initiative, would steer to cut across the head of his own line in an effort to do to him what he'd done to St. Ithman. But surprise, confusion, and horror are poor soil for initiative, especially for men who have never before experienced the violence of a point-blank broadside. The officers and the crews of those ships did their best, and after the initial strobes of panic, they responded with courage and determination. But they responded, they reacted, they made no effort to impose their own will. They defended themselves, getting their guns cleared away, bringing their batteries into action, despite their surprise, despite the confusion. They fired back, raggedly at first, then more steadily, even as an unending sequence of Carizian gunports sailed past them, every one of them belching flame and fury. They had nothing to be ashamed of, those men, those officers. Most of them, when their time came, fell facing their enemies, shouting defiance, manning their weapons. But the only thing that could have saved them was swift, determined, offensive action, and that was the one thing of which they were totally incapable.
Well, that was the easy part, Lock Island thought, as the shattered wrecks of the windward column fell astern.
Three more of them were on fire now, flames roaring up and painting the clouds in crimson and blood. It was obvious the other 10 ships were out of action for hours, probably days.
It was unlikely any of them would sink, and if they'd been going to catch fire, they would have already. But taken together, they represented almost 20% of Harper's total strength, and whatever else happened, they would play no part in any further combat this night.
"If we win, any one of them can be snapped up by a single schooner," the High Admiral thought. "If we lose, Harper will probably be able to recover and repair them all, eventually. But that's not going to happen."
A part of Lock Island was tempted to break off, to vanish back into the darkness. What had already happened to the Church fleet was bound to have brutal repercussions for its morale. And if he could break off for now, do the same thing again once or twice, then...
"Forget it," he told himself sternly. "Harper and Tybalt are too good for that kind of crap. Yes, you caught them with their trousers down and their bare arses hanging out tonight. What makes you think a pair as smart as they are is going to let you do that to them all over again? Besides, you only got away with it tonight because of the weather."
No, he'd hurt them badly. Now it was time to hurt them even more badly before they could recover.
"Captain Baker, we'll come about," he said, and waved at a distant red glimmer where firelight reflected on topsails to the northwest. "Those gentlemen are trying to get themselves into formation to greet us," he continued. "It would be rude to keep them waiting."